forest, Harvey and his sec men leading them on a path that only a thorough working knowledge of the territory could reveal. They went farther into the forest than Ryan and his people had penetrated before their first encounter with the sec force. Here, the many colored flowering plants decreased in favor of the mutated and stunted trees, which grew from the mounds of rubble. The creeping vines were more prevalent, flowering white and sweet-smelling, the flowers open, even at night. The tilted buildings stood firm, yet looked precarious on mounds of moved earth, their structures yielding slowly to gravity. Varieties of vine crawled across the spaces between buildings, forming a ceiling of green, sentient plant life that kept that part of the forest in perpetual twilight.
Not much farther.
Harvey's voice was startling in the silence engendered by their journey. It was a response to a question he had felt had been unspoken for some time.
You wouldn't have found the entrance, even with the map. We're real careful to keep ourselves hidden. You never know what's around.
Or what they had to hide, Mildred thought. There was something that was nagging at the back of her mind about the corpses, and why they needed to be retrieved. She tried to steal a look at them as she walked beside Bodhi and Brankeen. But the chilled corpses were too distorted for her to get a good look without somehow stopping the party and causing suspicion. Doc wouldn't be the only one with something to say to Ryan, she mused. Her musings were cut short by their arrival at a hidden entrance to the Vale of Raw.
Pull up here, people.
The one-eyed warrior looked around. It seemed as though they had arrived on an old street corner that was marked by three derelict and overgrown buildings and a stand of mutated trees growing out of the rubble where once a fourth had stood. The creeper was thick beneath their feet, and Ryan couldn't see how they could get beneath it easily.
Over here.
Downey smiled, moving to the small copse of trees. The companions followed him to find that the silver-haired sec man was reaching into the bole of a tree. He contorted his face with effort, tugging at something within. A section of ground to one side of the copse shuddered and began to move upward, hinged at one side so that it flipped over. Leading off from the opening was a flight of stone steps, roughly hewn from rock and concrete blocks that had been primitively mortared together. Downey indicated the opening.
After you.
Jack grinned admiringly.
Nice hide.
Harvey grunted as he and Ryan led the way down.
Takes us down to an old basement, tunneled through to an old mail subway line. But it's kept to a simple winch system so as we can use it if we lose what power we have.
Ryan wondered if this was part of the hidden stores of the Illuminated Ones.
You've got power? Fuel?
Some. We do some trading, sometimes. Most of our power is wood, oil from the plants for lamps and stuff. The creepers are really good for that. Any real power is used by the tech people.
Harvey trailed off, seemingly unwilling to continue, aware that he may already have said too much. He was spared any questions by a sec man appearing from the shadows at the bottom of the stairs. Ryan started at the sudden appearance, shifting the pole weight to one shoulder, while his now free hand snaked down to the holstered Sig Sauer. Harvey felt Ryan's weight shift to his rear, and guessed what the one-eyed warrior's move would be.
It's okay, Cyclops, he's one of mine.
The sec man was still hidden by shadow. He had a blaster in his hands that Ryan could tell was an Uzi from the shape and the way he was holding it. As he stepped out, Ryan could see that his eyes were blue and his hair long and blonde, framing a face that was lean with a hard, cold harshness. Ryan marked him down as dangerous. He wasn't an enemy yet, but caution was always a necessity.
You got them back?
Chill, but at least we can give them a decent send-off.
Jenna will be way pissed.
The blonde sec man shook his head before stepping back into the shadows and letting the group pass, with only a word of greeting to his fellow sec men and a look of suspicion for the companions. They proceeded down empty, winding tunnels dimly lit by oil lamps.
Jenna?
Baron's wife. Some say the real power. Now, I wouldn't be the one to spread that, Cyclops, but I would pay heed if it reached my ears.
Ryan said nothing. Not sure if the sec chief was giving him a warning or a threat. The lights grew more regular and brighter as they progressed through the tunnels, which were obviously a serviceable entrance into the heart of Raw. As they walked along the rail tracks of the old mail line, they found that there were more and more signs of habitation. Small shacks sprung up along the way, with a few small fires outside them and children running and playing. Children who, in the darkness up above, would have been sleeping. But here there was no day and night, only the perpetual half-light of the lamps. In many ways, this was no different from if they had lived in the twilight forest up above. Dean turned to Jack as they entered another, more heavily populated zone of the Ville.
Hey, Jack. Notice anything?
Jack had one eye on the Sekhmen surrounding them.
Maybe.
A lot of these people look the same.
Jack flashed a warning glance at the young Cotter.
People are the same anyway.
Yeah, maybe.
Dean seemed too lost in thought to notice Jack's true meaning. JB took in the surroundings.
Nice Ville you've got. Good guard system, especially the tunnel complex.
Yeah, we like to keep it tight and safe. There's a shitload of tunnels and basements in this old Ville, but we keep ourselves pretty much to one sector, making sure that the others always have a watch on. There's not many folks about these parts, but we like to keep ourselves to ourselves.
Yeah, so you've said before.
Christy tried to keep the note of suspicion out of her voice, but she couldn't stop the curls of her hair coiling tight to her throat and collarbone. They continued through the populated area. Some basements leading off of the tunnels had been converted wholesale into living units, or areas where vital survival trades were practiced. There was a cobbler and blacksmith, an area that seemed to act as a communal kitchen and dining area for at least that sector, and an armory. JB caught this in passing, and could see that there were two women at work dismantling and cleaning blasters. There were boxes lining the walls, and the smell of oil and cordite hung in the air around the cordoned-off area.
We don't have as many blasters as some Ville, stranger, but we like to keep them in good working order. You never know when you may need them, right?
There seemed to be a hint of warning in Bodhi's voice. JB, taking it for now, said nothing. Looking around, Ryan could see that they had quite a crowd following them, and other people appeared from tunnels leading off their route as word spread that they had returned with the chilled young. By the time they reached the central hall, they had a crowd behind them that had to have constituted most of the Ville. Ryan cast a look over his shoulder.
Just how many people you got under here?
250, maybe 300. Not much muty business either. We get enough people traveling through to keep us pretty mixed in the old gene pool.
Ryan's eye narrowed, even though he said nothing. It was more than a little unusual to find such knowledge of genetics expressed so casually in any Ville in the Deathlands, let alone one that was relatively isolated. They came to a halt in the center of the large room. It was circular, draped in somberly colored swaths of old material that lent it a shadowy, dusty air. At the far end, a long wooden table with high-backed chairs stood on a small dais, imposing over the rest of the arena. The hall itself had to have been part of a deep foundation, as it had a rough earthen floor, yet the walls visible through the gaps in the drapes were of concrete. Through one such gap, Ryan could see the ragged edge of a floor that had been torn down, or had fallen at some point in the past. That accounted for the surprisingly high and impressive ceiling. The Sek party put the corpses of the children down in the center of the hall. Harvey Sekhmen stepped back from them. Ryan's people did likewise. Casting a glance over his shoulder, Jack saw that the rear of the hall was now full of Ville dwellers, yet there was an eerie silence among them, with not even any sobs to break it. Noting Jack's unease, Ryan turned to Harvey.
What now?
The Sek chief said nothing, but gestured toward the table and the high-backed chairs. Two people had somehow slipped into the room from some secret entrance. One was a large, thick-set man who was just under 6 feet, and looked like his muscular frame was beginning to run to fat. He wheezed slightly under his long, flowing gray hair and long gray beard, but his eyes were still sharp, moving with a deliberate slowness over the dead children, and then over the outsiders among the Sek group. Christy shivered, a wave of nausea sweeping over her. Her hair coiled tight, then sprung loose, and for a moment she thought that she might pass out. She slowed her breathing, willing the wave of nausea to pass. What, she wondered, had caused that? It wasn't the old man, so it had to have been. Glittering, raven-black eyes bored into her. Christy felt the wave begin to swell once more and fought back, fighting at the tendrils of fear that began to wrap themselves around her mind. Her mind. That was what was happening. The woman accompanying the Baron was attempting to reach into her mind. Christy could feel that same doomy, feely instinct that she herself possessed to a small degree. The woman in front had sensed that in her but had a stronger ability and was trying to gauge Christie's strength. The flame-haired woman fought back mentally with all the willpower she possessed, closing off sections of her mind as she felt the tendrils of the other touch them.